This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
It adds up to a lot, and so we really have this belief of everyone has a 1%, and when we enact that 1% together, we can really create a global movement that makes real change, and that's happening. That's what we're doing.
When you read about the giant islands of plastic garbage in our ocean or see time-lapsed photos of diminishing Arctic sea ice, in order to stave off the helpless feeling that creeps up into your throat, do you ever reach into your wallet intending to donate to an organization that's making a difference? But then you may hesitate. To whom should you give to have the greatest impact? My guest this week on Sea Change Radio is here to help. She's Kate Williams, the CEO of 1% for the Planet, a nonprofit that serves as a sort of conduit for environmental giving. They do the research to make it easier for individuals and businesses to support the right environmental organizations. We discuss their model, look at the philanthropic space as a whole, and explore why only 3% of charitable donations in this country go to the environmental sector. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Kate Williams. She's the CEO of a nonprofit called 1% for the Planet. Kate, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. I'm really grateful to be here with you.
So for our listeners, explain in a nutshell, what 1% for the Planet is all about.
Sure. 1% for the Planet is a nonprofit, and we are a global network of member businesses and individuals who commit to giving 1%. In the case of businesses, they give 1% of their sales, and in the case of individuals, they give 1% of their salary or net worth. And when I say give, the way it works is that we advise and certify the giving that our members do. So we have a network of nonprofits also who we learn about, get to know, make sure that they're really solid in their work. And then we support our members in figuring out which nonprofits are the best partners for them. And then they do the giving directly to those nonprofits, and we certify that. So it's a really cool model in that it creates this powerful network of partnerships between individuals, businesses, and nonprofits, all oriented toward making a really significant difference for the planet.
So to better understand it, maybe you can explain how like a business might interact with your organization and then a nonprofit that might receive some of these donated funds.
Sure. So say business A comes to us and says, we'd love to be a member. We care about the planet. We care about climate change, but we're not really sure how best to use a membership with you to make a difference. And we say, great, come aboard and let's talk. And so we have a process that we've put in place for our members and for our nonprofits where we ask a lot of questions. And in the case of businesses, we're trying to understand what they hope to accomplish, what kind of brand story they want to tell, what kind of employee engagement they're interested in, what kind of impact they want to see, what business problems they're trying to solve that giving might be part of. So lots of questions just to really get a very detailed understanding of what they're after. And then our team is able to do work with our nonprofits, and sometimes we go outside of our network and bring new nonprofits in to find those nonprofits that best meet the sort of detailed needs and interests of that member company. And then we're able to make an introduction and facilitate, the partnership, and then the business and the nonprofit that they decide on kind of take it from there in terms of the actual giving, but also any volunteer time or other storytelling that they do together. And we help then to, we stay in touch, of course, and we help to amplify those stories, to help share opportunities within the network and things like that.
And how do the nonprofits find you and vice versa?
At this point, we don't accept uninvited applications of nonprofits because we have a pretty robust network, but oftentimes members or our staff members will recommend nonprofits because we either see that there are gaps in what we have, or because a member may be in an area where there's a, you know, highly local nonprofit that we were previously unaware of, and we're able to assess them and then potentially bring them into the network. So it's, we find out about them in a lot of different ways, but then they end up needing to have that recommendation from a member or a staff member.
So give us an example, if you can. We talked about business A, but let's dive into some real life applications of 1% for the Planet in action.
Sure. A great example of a member with whom we did this what we call strategic impact advising work is King Arthur Flour. So they are a member with their with one of their product lines, and that's another thing is some of our a few of our members join at the product line level because that's a better fit for them. So King Arthur Flour came to us. You know, they're a 100 plus year old company based in Vermont. They have a strong tradition of philanthropy. And they said, we'd love to be a member, we're a B Corp, you know, it made a lot of sense, so they joined on. And then over the first, 18 months to 2 years of their membership, we had a lot of conversations with them around what they really wanted to accomplish and what kind of story they wanted to tell. And it was really neat to see how, as they got to know what we could do with them, they were really interested in evolving their giving. And so we worked with them and, you know, went through the questionnaire and that process that I described. And they ended up developing a new partnership with a nonprofit called the Young Farmers Coalition of America, because it really speaks to a lot of their interest in engaging people in farming and essentially investing in their supply chain, because they wanted to be part of keeping farms in farming. And by getting young people onto the land and educated about farming and good practices, they could do that. And so they've developed this really amazing, robust partnership and have done a lot of blog posts and videos together and are able to tell this really powerful story. And it's an evolution of the giving that they had been doing, so that it's much more targeted to align with what they're trying to do with their brand. I would say the best way to describe it is that we're like a financial advisor, but in for philanthropy. So we have our core expertise, and what we have devoted ourselves to for the last 15 years is to developing a really deep understanding of the environmental nonprofit sector, and also of how to create the most effective partnerships between businesses and nonprofits. And we've just added individuals into the mix as members in the last year. So that's the core expertise, and the way we deploy that is in a sort of advising role. And so you know, it's a little different than a company creating their own foundation, because their expertise remains in their sort of core business, whereas our expertise, our core business, is that deep knowledge of nonprofits, environmental nonprofits, and partnerships.
So what is the problem 1% for the Planet is trying to address? You obviously are environmentally focused.
Yep, so we're environmentally focused, and specifically and kind of narrowly within that, the problem we're trying to solve is the fact that for the past decade or more, out of the total U.S. philanthropy, you know, out of all of the giving that people are doing, people, foundations, you know, the total philanthropy in the U.S., only 3% is directed to the environment. And that number has varied, like, you know, by 0.1 percentage points up or down for 10 years, but it basically has not changed. And given the scale of the environmental issues that we face in so many different areas, so climate, food, land, water issues, oceans and freshwater, wildlife, pollution, I mean, it's a big list, and you know, we don't have a number for what the cost of solving all those problems is. What we do have is direct knowledge from all of our nonprofits that they are not sufficiently funded to address all of those issues. So there's not enough funding being directed to environmental, really important and urgent environmental causes. So the problem that we're trying to solve is to get both more money to those nonprofits, and to also make it, to educate and help develop smarter giving partnerships, so that there's increased value for all of the giving that's happening. And so when we, our mission is to accelerate smart environmental giving. And so we're really looking to grow that 3%, to push it up, to bring new givers in, to help people who are already giving, to get educated on how to develop smarter and stronger giving partnerships, and so that we can really affect change together.
When you talk about this 3% to the environment, does that include some of these big conservation groups? We did a piece a couple of years ago. It was Jeremy Hantz. He did a special report on big conservation and where this money is going to with some of these well-known wildlife groups like the Nature Conservancy and World Wildlife Fund. That's included in that 3% number, I imagine.
Yep, it definitely is. And also, interestingly, just, you know, because this isn't always apparent to people, what's also included in that number is like humane society types of giving, which is sometimes something people think of separately, and we don't have a value judgment on, you know, whether or not that should or shouldn't be considered an environmental issue. But just so people understand, if their conception of the environment is more, you know, climate, food, land, those kinds of things, there's actually even, you know, a smaller percentage going to those issues.
So that 3% includes like the SPCA or PETA or something like that.
It does.
Wow. You said you already kind of have a full roster of nonprofits that you steer money towards. How do you find some of the smaller environmental groups that you deem worthy of funds from your clients?
Yeah, I want to be clear. Like, we don't consider our roster full. We consider it to be very, you know, robust and to have a lot there, but we are always open to additional great nonprofits. And we're also very committed to, you know, elevating those, you know, potentially smaller, newer nonprofits, not because we think they're necessarily better if they're smaller and newer. I mean, we don't have an opposition to the Nature Conservancies or the, you know, the bigger ones. What our interest is in is, you know, who's going to be able to deliver the impact in the way that's of greatest value to this particular member that we're talking about. And that varies. So for some members, you know, what they're trying to accomplish and the kind of story they want to tell and the kind of partnership they want to develop, you know, might be well suited to, you know, one of the, what, you know, so-called big greens. But what we find a lot is that when we go through that questioning process and really understand what a member is trying to accomplish, very often, you know, more often than not, what bubbles to the top, or the nonprofits that bubble to the top, are these smaller, focused, impact-driven nonprofits who are in a position to form really great partnerships with these members. And so it's super exciting, and a part of our work that we really love is that the process itself, which we feel like is a very diligent and good process, often ends up highlighting nonprofits that may not have been known, were in many cases not known to those members before, but, you know, these amazing partnerships develop, and it's a really, really great opportunity for everyone involved in some exciting and unexpected ways.
In this world full of strife and confusion, starvation, drought, and pollution, we don't have much time to find a better way. We got to give more than we take. What a difference we could make. It's the only way. If we could give a little more than what's expected, do a little more than our share, go the extra mile to help each other, soon we'd surely see more peace and harmony. It's up to you and me to give a little more. What we need is more truthful information to understand this crucial situation. We got to work it out together like family.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kate Williams. She's the CEO of 1% for the Planet. So, Kate, why is the organization called 1% for the Planet?
Well, it's a great name and a challenging name in some ways. It's a great name because we're called that because that's what we do. We engage members in giving their 1% for the planet. So again, in the case of business members, that's 1% of their sales, not their profits, their sales. And in the case of individual members, that is, you know, 1% of their salary or net worth. And more broadly, and this is something we're really increasingly focusing on, is it's also a statement of our philosophy, which is that everyone has a 1%. We really believe that one of the challenges and one of the reasons we have this problem of insufficient giving, of only 3% of total philanthropy going to the environment, is that a lot of times people who care about the environment feel overwhelmed or unsure about how to give. And I think what we try and do is to break it down and to really have people understand that everyone has a 1%. So our members give 1%, but if you're not a member, you can still purchase 1% for the planet products and drive change in that way. And you can also sort of think through the reality of the fact that if everyone gives their 1% of time, of dollars, it adds up to a lot. And so we really have this belief of everyone has a 1%. And when we enact that 1% together, we can really create a global movement that makes real change. And that's happening. That's what we're doing.
So without excoriating other sectors of the philanthropy world, when we talk about this 3% piece of the pie going towards environmental causes, let's break down the other 97%. Let's say 10% of giving goes to environmental causes. Who should suffer from that? Where is some of the pork, let's say, in the giving space?
Not to not answer the hard question of who wins and who loses, I think there actually and very legitimately is a space in which it's not about winners and losers. It's about growing ability for nonprofits to actually appropriately sort of stress and address the complexity and sort of cross-issue nature of a lot of problems. In other cases, and we all have to do this, I think, you know, we have companies who will go through a process of deciding that what they most want to do is really focus. And so they may have had some so-called like social nonprofits that, you know, may have been more, focused on, sort of traditionally non-environmental issues, and they may decide to gradually shift over to environmental issues. And we, you know, sort of advise them on doing that, you know, not, don't make sudden breaks because that can be really hard for nonprofits, but just make a gradual shift. In other cases, and this gets into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty of our model, part of a company's 1% can come in the form of in-kind donations. So product donations or service donations that we, you know, would place a value on and then include in the certification. Part can also come in the form of employee volunteer time. And so a lot of times companies are able to, you know, add those items in and place the appropriate value on those. And those are hugely important to nonprofits. So they kind of expand in that way into more environmental giving, and they're able to maintain their partnerships with, you know, say, existing social nonprofits.
Let me give you some of the percentages. In 2017, the majority of charitable dollars went to health, which was 9%, grant-making foundations, 11%, human services, 12%. I don't really know exactly what that is. Education, 14%. And what do you think the largest percentage was? It's almost a third. It's 31%.
Yeah, it's religious.
Religion. If we change some of the tax laws about giving to religious organizations as a write-off, that immediately shifts the whole paradigm of how that pie is apportioned, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, we take a sort of positive additive approach. So what we're trying to do is both, you know, make those shifts that I described before. And then also we see a lot of new giving. And so, you know, what really needs to happen is more businesses need to sort of see the value which exists. There's very real value, and the consumer data points to this, in adding environmental giving to their sort of portfolio of activities, the different ways in which they show up in the world, the different ways in which they drive purpose, and to drive that number up in an additive way.
So charitable giving has been rising in this country for years, usually anywhere from 5 to 8% annually. Do you have any idea if it's similar in the environmental nonprofit space, Kate?
Environmental giving is going up in an absolute number, but it's remained at this 3%, give or take, for the last 10 years. So that's the thing, is to try and sort of have, you know, more people coming into giving. And the other piece of this is, you know, there's the, like, which issues do you care most about? And that's one sort of case that needs to be made. But there's also people's sort of understanding of and confidence in what happens as a result of that giving. And so one of the things that we've researched and also certainly heard from some of our members and, you know, people that we're talking to about membership, because that's, we do a lot of that. So we get a lot of just anecdotal information from people about how they're thinking about giving. And, you know, we do hear a lot that, you know, there's a very widespread, I'll use one example, there's widespread concern about climate, but there's also widespread confusion and just feeling overwhelmed about, well, what can I actually do? Whereas a lot of times with, you know, human services, which would be things like homeless shelters or, you know, providing services for less privileged people in a community, sometimes the metrics for that can be very clear in terms of X number of beds per dollar donated or X number of meals or things like that. And I think the evidence definitely supports that people are often, you know, motivated by something where they can have a really clear sense of, what do my dollars accomplish? And in a number of environmental issues like climate, that can be difficult, because the impact or the change may not be immediate. It may not be quantifiable at the level of, you know, the donations that people can make. And so I think part of the work of the nonprofit community and what we're really trying to support and communicate with our nonprofits, and many other nonprofits are, you know, working on this as well, is, you know, we need to do a better job of being able to articulate how donors to environmental nonprofits are driving true impact, and how they can understand how their involvement makes a difference. Because I think at the, like, the human services level, at the education level, where people are sort of able to, you know, see their kids, or, you know, kids in general, or, you know, in religious institutions and churches, you know, there's just a very direct, you know, ask and a direct tie in people's minds between what they're giving and what's happening.
So, Kate, we've been talking mostly about giving trends in this country, but what are we seeing in terms of momentum globally? The U.S. pretty much stands alone in having a big climate denial movement in this country. So let's look at other countries around the globe where there isn't a force that's kind of keeping everybody's head in the sand when it comes to the realities of climate change. Is environmental giving usually a bigger piece of the giving puzzle in other countries?
We don't have the same data sources on other countries. It's like we've gotten some different types of data. But from what we do know, it's fairly similar. And it, you know, varies depending on sort of level of government investment in environmental issues, which, as you know, some European countries are doing quite a bit more. Some, you know, some places are doing a lot less. So, you know, there's a lot of variance. What we do see, and what we, you know, what is the sort of information that we know, is that in a number of countries globally, we're getting a really, really strong response to our model, in the spirit of believing that businesses have a role to play. And that's been trending up, and that's in part driven by the consumer data, which is global and which does really support the fact that there's a strong and growing consumer interest in buying products from companies that are making a difference. And they can be doing that in a bunch of different ways. 1% for the planet is one of them, but, you know, we are seeing that globally. And so, for example, in the UK and in Western Europe generally, in Australia, in Japan, we have pretty strong member growth, and we haven't, as a staff, been able to invest a lot of time in those places. We've certainly done promotion. We actually have a France chapter, so that is one place where we have sort of committed and made an investment. And, you know, there's been a really strong response there. So, you know, we are, what, again, what we are able to see is that there's a strong and growing interest in companies giving back in, you know, markets outside of the U.S.
So how can people get involved? You've just opened up the floodgates for individuals to give to 1% for the planet, Kate. How can people donate besides just going to your site? Maybe you can kind of walk us through some of the anecdotes of how people get involved.
Yeah, it's a really great opportunity. And one of the things we really like about it is that it's one of the most democratic way giving opportunities. So our current individual membership has everything from, you know, a teenager giving 1% of their babysitting money to Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia, who's a 1% individual member, who's committing 1% of his giving, or 1% of his salary to giving. And so it's, you know, it's a real diversity. And again, it's that everyone has a 1%. So the way people can join is we have information on our website. So you can just go like straight up, fill out the information and join as a member. You can also reach out through our Stay Informed link and just say, hey, I'd like to be an individual member. Can someone tell me more? So we can, you know, kind of have that connection. We are going to be doing a campaign this fall that will create an opportunity for people to learn more, pledge to become an individual member, and then have the opportunity again for us to follow up and kind of walk people into being part of this great movement.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kate Williams. She's the CEO of 1% for the Planet. Why 1%? That seems kind of low to me. I mean, you hear about the tithing system in churches. That's 10%. When you're talking about like Yvon Chouinard from Patagonia, like that person, I'm assuming, gives much, much more to philanthropic causes than 1% of his salary or net worth, right?
Yeah, you're correct on that. And I should also say, not sure if it's his salary or his net worth, but he gives his 1%. So what it means is people, we certify that they're giving at least 1%, and that's what we do with companies. Many give more, and Yvon would probably be, you know, an example of that. But one thing I just want to be clear about for 1% individuals is that they're not giving it all to us. They're getting the same service that our business members get. We're encouraging them to give to the environmental nonprofits of their choice, and they have access to our advice and support in that. They pay a dues fee to us, which is part of their 1%, and that's what business members do as well. But, you know, the focus is on, you know, giving to environmental nonprofits who are doing the work in different issue areas of interest and concern to those individual members.
Kate Williams is the CEO of 1% for the Planet. Kate, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Lettuce, Eric Bibb, and Rory Block.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.